This is All About Living with Carol Colby. All About Living is brought to you by Gunderson Funeral Home Cremation Care, Turville Bay MRI and Radiation Oncology Center in Madison, Home Health United, The Medicine Shop Monona, Independent Living, All About Living with Carol Colby.
Welcome to All About Living. This is Carol Colby. And with no further ado, I'm going to get right into introducing our guest to you today because I am so excited and actually privileged to have him back on our program. This is a return visit for Dan Buettner. He has been on our program twice before, but now I'm bringing him back to even expand on the wonderful conversation we've had about living the longest, best, and healthiest life we possibly can. If the name is familiar to you, it might be because you have already heard or seen him in the national media. Dan Buettner is an internationally recognized researcher, explorer, and New York Times best-selling author and National Geographic Fellow. And his books, and the first book was The Blue Zones, Lessons for Living Longer from the People Who've Lived the Longest, was published in 2008. And he followed that book with Thrive, another book, Finding Happiness, The Blue Zones Way, which was published in 2010. And he's been all over the news media on Oprah, and I've seen him on CNN and Good Morning America and the Today program, and NPR did a feature all about this concept of living well and living happiness. So, Dan, we've got a lot to cover. First of all, welcome to the program. It's a pleasure to have you back. And to kind of go chronologically, I even go back further because I first discovered you in 2005 when we picked up our National Geographic magazine, and there was the cover story of Lessons About Living Longer by Dan Buettner. And so I think that was the inspiration for the Blue Zones book, which followed after that. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah. As usual, you're on the cutting edge.
Oh, yeah, I'm on the cutting edge. I'm one of your groupies.
I love it.
Anyway, let's start with The Blue Zones. That was your big published book that hit the bestseller list in 2008. And you talk about the areas of the world that you and you had a group of scientists and researchers that that participated with you in this study. This wasn't just one man's quest, but you had some of the top scientists in the country working with you on this. And you went to areas of the world where people are living the longest. So describe the areas and what you found.
Yeah, that was actually a three-year project just to find areas. There'd been a lot of misinformation about where people live the longest. We used to think Vilcabamba Valley of Ecuador, or the Shangri-La, which is today's Pakistan, or Soviet Georgia, where people ate yogurt and supposedly drank vodka and smoked and lived 120. All those places were debunked. So we, working with demographers mostly in Europe, who very carefully look at birth records and death records, we found five places. We call them the Blue Zones. It's a bigger theme now. But Okinawa, Japan, the highlands of Sardinia in Italy, a small island called Ikaria off the coast of Turkey, Loma Linda, California, the Seventh-day Adventist right here in the United States, and then the Nicoya Peninsula of Costa Rica. And essentially, the work is all rooted in the notion that, number one, only about 10% of how long we live is dictated by genes. The other 90% is lifestyle and environment. So if we can find the verifiable areas where people are living longer, and I'm talking an extra decade in some cases, seven or eight times as many centenarians, proportionally speaking, mm-hmm. if we can find out what they do with some scientific rigor, we emerge with the de facto formula for longevity. And that's the idea behind Blue Zones.
And those four areas, you had to really research scientifically to make sure of the authenticity of the age of some of these people, because there were all of these people over 100 years of age, and how did you know for sure?
Yeah, typically, the way the adage goes, if there's poor record keeping, people live the longest.
Okay.
So what happens, and it's not necessarily people are trying to lie, though in the case of Soviet Georgia, people were lying because they were trying to get out of Stalin's draft mm-hmm. 60, 70 years ago. But what happens is in some of these countries, people don't keep their birth dates. They don't have identification cards. So they get to be 80 years old, and then the next year, I think I'm 83, and then the following year, they're 87, and pretty soon they look very old, and villagers say, oh, he's 100 years old, when really he's 85.
Yeah.
So But that's what happens. It's age exaggeration.
Right, but still to have these high numbers of people that are living, and they were living healthy lives for that age and productive lives.
See, that's the most interesting thing. People, you ask people, do you want to be 100? And they say no. Well, the answer actually is yes, and for two reasons. Number one, when you get 99 and you ask 99-year-olds if they want to be 100, they all say yes. But number two, if you're living to be 100, that means you're biologically younger every decade up to 100. That means you're living a lifestyle that where you're likely not to be suffering diabetes or heart disease. You're less likely to get cancer. Your skin is healthier. You feel more energetic. These are all the benefits that come along with the Blue Zones lifestyle.
And what you discovered is it's basically lifestyle issues. You didn't discover any magic pills or pharmaceutical companies that we didn't know existed that had the magic potion.
I can tell you right now that there is no supplement, there's no hormone, there's no injection, there's no resveratrol. Nothing has been shown to reverse, stop, or even slow aging. So the $40 billion America is spending on supplement is money down the toilet. The longest-lived people in the world do not rely on pills.
Tell us what the key factors were, that the thread that you found through these areas in the world, which really geographically have no common bonds.
Yeah, we found 9 common denominators. We call them the Power 9. And the first one is, when it comes to physical activity, is move naturally, deconvenience your home, try to get rid of as many power tools as possible, low furniture, growing a garden, making sure you have a working bicycle, things that nudge you into physical activity. Every 90 minutes or so of inactivity, of sitting at your desk or sitting on a couch, your body drops into hibernative mode. So if you can set up nudges that get you standing up and moving around for just a few minutes every hour, you're actually going to burn more calories at the end of the day than spending 20 minutes on the treadmill, because you're keeping your metabolism burning higher.
Occasionally, I talk to various groups around Madison area, and I will reference you often. And what I say regarding this first point of yours is live inconveniently. Just moving around, making it a little more difficult to get from one room to another, go up and down stairs, do whatever, but just keep moving.
Get rid of your remote if you can get up and push the button on the TV. You know, this may sound a little extreme, but I actually just talked to someone in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, just an hour ago, who actually did this. You look at the way the Okinawan women, longest-lived women on the planet, no furniture in their home. When they're getting up and down off the ground 30 or 40 times a day. That's like doing 30 or 40 squats.
Right.
Without thinking about it. They're doing it into their hundreds. The lady I talked to in Cedar Rapids after reading Blue Zone, she went and she put her mattress on her floor. She got a really low platform. But at least twice a day, she's making that little bit of extra effort. All those little bits, 2-3 calories at a time, when you're doing them 30 or 40 times a day, they don't require any real effort, but they add up. 150 calories a day, that's 6 pounds off your waistline.
Right, besides what it does for the body and keeping the body in shape and fit and
exactly.
Strong and balance issues, which is such an important concern as we age, the balance aspect. Let's move through this list because we've got a lot of other things to go over too. That was the keep moving and then finding a purpose.
Yeah, the most dangerous year in your life, besides the year you're born or the year you retire. So having a non-work sense of purpose is worth about 7 years of life expectancy. And you find in all these Blue Zone areas, people can articulate their sense of purpose at their whole age. There's actually vocabulary for it, like ikigai. So taking the time to do your internal inventory, what are my passions, what are my values, what do I like to do, and what am I good at? And the key is, how can I contribute my gifts? Where can I volunteer my talents? And that is a 7 years of life expectancy.
Continuing to make a difference. So not retiring from life, but retiring to something if you're going to be retiring from a work job or whatever.
And not being faced that year that you retire, what am I going to do now? Mm-hmm. Start it. You know, of course, when we have little kids and we have our new job. That we got to put a lot of energy there. But by the time you're hitting middle age, you should be looking for that outlet for your talents and your passions, and start volunteering just an hour or 2 weeks. People volunteer a couple hours a week, higher levels of well-being. They actually weigh less. And this is a very good study done out of Baltimore, University of Baltimore. People volunteer actually have lower health care costs. So
that's something that goes to the top of the list right now with our national concerns about health care. And then I love your third point. Apparently, we Americans don't know the benefits, or we are guilty about slowing down and resting and working less.
Shedding stress is the idea. Every major age-related disease, Alzheimer's disease, cancer, osteoporosis, several heart disease, has a root in chronic inflammation. State when you're nervous or anxious or in a hurry all the time and your blood is full of these hormones that wreak havoc on your joints and your arteries and wrinkle your skin and shrink your brain. Guess what? People in blue zones, they suffer the same stresses we do. They worry about their kids. They worry about their finances. They tend to be poor people, incidentally. They worry about their health. But what they do have are periods of the day when they can shed their stress.
And they take little vacations.
Or
little breaks.
Yeah, little breaks in the day, either through prayer or, like I said, meditation, or doing happy hour, taking a nap. Huge. People who take naps for 30 minutes a day have about a third less incidence of heart disease than people who skip a nap and just power through the middle afternoon.
Yeah.
Take the nap, for crying out loud.
Getting sleep, getting extra rest, sometimes it gets bad press, and it's one of the greatest benefits to maintaining our health. And then let's just do one point, and we're going to have to stop for a break, and come back and move through the rest of them quickly. Stop eating when you're 80% full. Now, is that the Okinawans follow that practice?
Yeah, the hot hachi boo. But that's a little, so you have to Americanize these things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the tricks that really work? Well, first of all, a huge breakfast. Starting your day with protein source, carbohydrates, complex carbohydrates, and even some fat, because we need that satiation to take us through the mid-morning when we get those hunger pains. Big breakfast eaters actually consume fewer calories, and people start the day with a breakfast bar. The other important thing, I think, is pre-plating your food. We make 275 food decisions a day. The most important one is, am I going to serve my family or myself a plate of food with a nice balance of fruits and vegetables and whole wheats and maybe a little bit of meat, a little bit of fish? Or am I going to do it family style? Do it family style. Research shows people dig into the fatty, salty mashed potatoes. Mm. They're not going after the green beans. So pre-plating the food, then put the rest away. It's less likely you'll overeat.
Well, this is the new way that food choices are being presented, on a plate and the plate broken up, versus the food pyramid, which we used to have.
Michelle Obama's new.
Yes. And it's so simple, and you can look right at this round plate and see the portions, like in pie shape or whatever, of the vegetables, high on vegetables, you know, high on fruits, and then a little bit of protein and a few grains. So we're going to stop for a break. When we come back, we'll quickly move through the rest of the power of nine that you've discovered in the blue zones, and then talk about what you have since discovered about happiness and how this ties into the whole picture, and then some of the remarkable changes that you made in one entire community of Elbert Lee, Minnesota. Our guest today on All About Living is Dan Buettner, author of The Blue Zones, Lessons for Living Longer from the People Who've Lived the Longest, and Thrive, Finding Happiness the Blue Zones Way. You're listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY, and this segment has been brought to you by Home Health United. You got a friend right here, online at homehealthunited.org. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is All About Living with Carol Colby, Madison 1670 WTDY.
Welcome back to All About Living. Our guest today is Dan Buettner, author of The Blue Zones, Lessons for Living Longer from the People Who've Lived the Longest, and Thrive, Finding Happiness the Blue Zones Way. Dan has also been involved with Albert Lea, Minnesota, in partnership with AARP, applying the principles of the Blue Zones to that community, and has successfully, on a community-wide basis, raised life expectancy and lowered healthcare costs by some 40%. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about that, but before we get to that, prior to the break, we were talking about the basic information or the guidelines on healthy living that he discovered first in the Blue Zones, the areas of the world where people are living the longest and the healthiest. And we've been through some of the power of nine that he discovered. There's also the ones we haven't talked about, dine on plants, while we were talking about the importance of eating and putting your plate together instead of just dishing up food at the table. Then you have drinking wine, joining a group, feeding your soul, loving your tribe. How do all these tie together kind of as a group, Dan?
Well, the three things that are about 50% of how long we live is how we connect. Mm-hmm. So investing in your family. Married people live longer than non-married people. So investing in your spouse, keeping your aging parent nearby, investing in your children so they're more likely to take care of you. All of those, that creates a virtuous circle. We know people who belong to a faith, and it doesn't matter if you're Jewish, Muslim, Buddhist, Catholic, Christian, whatever. 4 to 14 extra years of life expectancy if you show up at least 4 times a month. And then finally, the big thing, the really important takeaway here, is thinking about who you hang out with. Habits are contagious, like a cold. If you hang out with people who like to sit on the couch and watch reruns of Leave It to Beaver and eat Doritos and drink Mountain Dew, guess what you'll be doing? If your three best friends are obese, there's 150% better chance that you'll be overweight yourself. So proactively building a close social network around yourself of people who do things like garden or walk, who eat plant-based, who have a religious component to their lives, who have meaning. All of that is contagious and so important, because if you're not going to do it for the long run, don't bother.
Mm-hmm.
These people who take off and run a marathon, I'm going to get a marathon and get healthy. Forget it. Because if you run a year of marathons and then go back and live the rest of your life, that year of busting your butt to run marathons is do you no good. You need to think of what's long-term, and guess what? Friends are long-term adventures, and that's why they have such a big impact in our life expectancy.
Connecting positive lifestyle behaviors with the social interaction and being with the people who inspire you and motivate you and join with you in doing these things. So you're not the odd person out trying to live healthy and in the midst of a circle of people that aren't. Okay. And then the one I touched on, but it's kind of stands alone, and the drink, you said drink red wine. And so there is a healthy component to having. And I remember when I talked to you before, you said to me, you know, the red wine is important, but you know what? Spirits in general are helpful.
Yeah, drinkers outlive non-drinkers. So, and you can have a cocktail, or it can be a beer or two at the end of the day. But we know what that does is it lowers your stress hormones. And we know that people who have one or two or maybe even three a day, can't go more than that, and no, you can't save up all week long and have 14 on the weekend.
Yeah.
We know those people outlive the people who don't drink at all, and it may be indicative of a bigger lifestyle, but it's probably not a bad idea.
Well, and then there's some social interaction typically with it, which has the benefit.
Yeah, and polyphenols, which the red wine. Mm-hmm. There's one type of red wine we found in Sardinia, a Cannonau. It's a varietal that we found had the highest levels of antioxidants, and that's kind of fun to talk about.
Now, what is the component, what is the thread between living the longest, which you've discovered in the Blue Zones, and then moving on to your book Thrive and discovering the areas of the world where people are the happiest, and are there similar things in their lifestyles?
Well, the Blue Zone way of doing things is essentially this. We find the evidence-based parts of the world where people do something the best, and then we learn their lessons. So in the same way we work with longevity, what Thrive did was go to the parts of the world where people are happiest and then distill their secret. It was a 5-year National Geographic project, and it worked with the biggest databases in the world to identify the happiest region of the happiest country on each of four continents. And then we use a methodic way to distill that all down.
What is your definition of happiness?
Well, we use something called the Cantrell Self-Anchoring Index to begin with. And what that essentially does, it's a test that's done in 141 countries by big universities, and they show people a ladder with 10 rungs on it. And everybody can understand a ladder with 10 rungs on it. You can be in China or North Dakota, it doesn't matter. And you say, all right, consider your life as a whole. Your worst possible life is at the bottom of that ladder. Your best possible life is on rung number 10. Tell us what rung you're on.
Mm-hmm.
And people who put their life at a 7 or an 8 and think that in 5 years from now their happiness, their life satisfaction will be somewhat higher, those people are said to be thriving. That's where I got the name of the book, Thrive.
Okay.
And we simply went around the world, the parts of the world where people say their lives are happiest. And not just a few random individuals, because occasionally a random individual isn't completely truthful. But when you get a representative sample, we're talking thousands here,
mm-hmm.
that kind of statistically washes out the lies. So you get a really accurate snapshot when the survey is done accurately. And so we have four parts of the world, slightly different value sets, and indeed what we found, there are slightly different things that make different people happy, but there's like blue zones, there's a thread of universals that we can all learn from.
And where are the areas of the world? I happen to know what the first area is because I was watching Millionaire, Who Wants to Be Millionaire with Meredith Vieira, and that was one of the questions that came up a couple of weeks ago. Where has been defined the happiest place in the world?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's Denmark.
Denmark, right. That was the answer, and I knew it.
And I should have let you say it, actually, but we actually found the happiest region in Denmark, which is Aarhus. People didn't know that. So there's we found the bullseye there, not just the target. Place in Asia, you know, people think, well, Bhutan, the gross national happiness index, or Fiji, but those aren't the happiest. The happiest place in Asia is actually Singapore, which shocked some people.
Absolutely. That was a big surprise.
The happiest place in Latin America is in and around Monterrey, Mexico, which is just across the border from Laredo. And then the happiest place in the Americas we found in San Luis Obispo, part of California, Central California, where Americans say they're the happiest.
All right. Now, let's break those down. What was there about the region in Denmark that made that the happiest area? What did you find? What were the keys?
Well, it underlines the importance of living life at a high plateau rather than trying to strive for something you don't have. So in Denmark, you have an environment where they're very high taxes, so it's very hard to be a millionaire. But guess what? The vast majority, everybody in Denmark has education. Everybody in Denmark has health care. They don't have to worry about their health. Older people are taken care of. Gallup just came out with a finding today that shows that about 68% of Americans, the thing they worry about most is retirement. Well, nobody in Denmark worries about that because their retirement is cared for. So they have a system where everybody has enough. Very few people have too much, and even fewer have too little. And that's an important point for policymakers, I think, interested in maximizing happiness.
And they have a balance to their lifestyle where they do take these breaks and these vacations, right?
Yes, they take 6 weeks of vacation a year, which is ideal.
Mm-hmm.
On average, they work 37 and a half hours a week, which leaves them time. Everybody has their own hobby. Everybody belongs to a club, so they're getting the social interaction they ought to get. They tend to commute to work on bicycle or on foot. We know the thing that Americans hate most about our day-to-day living is our getting in our cars and driving to work.
Mm-hmm.
So they manage to push that out. It's not about great parties or, winning a contest or having the biggest house or nicest set of clothes. It's about living life on a high plateau of contentment and doing so for decades.
Right, because you don't think of the Danish people, and I grew up in northern Wisconsin with amongst many Scandinavians. In fact, I'm that ancestry myself, but it's they're more reserved, and so it isn't the sometimes gaiety or that you see with some other cultures.
But the great line I heard about the Danes is, do you know the difference between an outgoing Dane and an introvert Dane?
What is it?
The outgoing Dane is looking down at your shoes instead of his own.
Well, that's about it. That's a good way to describe it. You know, we've had different ones regarding standing ovations, you know, and it's just this clap, clap, clap. Let's move on to Singapore, because that one was a surprise. They have such stringent law enforcement in Singapore that sometimes people are fearful to go there.
Well, the stringent laws, if you go in there to shoot up heroin or to commit a violent crime, Singapore is not a good place to visit. But if you're going to go there and obey the laws like 99.9% of us who travel do, you don't have a problem. There are very strict laws, and there's very strict enforcement in Singapore. But the government goes out of its way to explain, here is why we are doing these things. We know we like a clean society, so there's a fine for spitting. There's a fine for spitting out your gum. There's a fine for not flushing a public toilet, which seems ridiculous. But on the other hand, cleanliness, orderliness is important to their value set, and this has yielded. The other thing that evolutionary biologists will tell you is that we are hardwired more for security. In other words, we get more satisfaction out of security than we do freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this country does there's a lot of sort of drum pounding about the importance of freedom and how we export freedom and so forth. But actually, the caveman who was interested in security, interest in where's my next meal coming from, interested in being wary of that tribe over the hill, of having somebody nice to sleep with so you have somebody in your... That person was more likely to get his genes in the next generation than the freedom, the one that felt, I can do anything I want to do. So the gene set that got into, that we've inherited, is the gene set that finds kind of a genetic satisfaction with feeling secure.
And they documented also, too, the satisfaction of being with aging parents, and that we don't realize it, but studies have shown that we actually enjoy socializing with our parents better than anybody else as we get older in life.
The happiest people in the world socialize about 7 hours a day. And we like, you're right, we like socializing with our parents more than we think. And the laws in Singapore are such that you actually get a tax break if you keep your aging parent nearby. Now you say, well, big deal. Well, that means you're going to socialize more with them than if they live in Florida or Arizona, if they live 100 meters away. And number two, your parents are going to get better care, so that the elderly are going to report higher levels of happiness. And they're going to get, without having to rely on the government, children are taking care of their parents instead of expecting Social Security to do. There's a Social Security that steps in at a certain point. But this trend here in America, where we increasingly send our aging parents to retirement homes, and we increasingly rely on Medicare, and we increasingly rely on Social Security, those things aren't as big of an issue when you have simple laws or simple tax incentives to keep aging parents close to the home or even in the home.
We're going to have to stop for another break, but it's fascinating information that you have learned from places around the world on what makes people happy, what makes them live longer, healthier lives. Our guest is Dan Buettner on All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY. And this segment of our program has been brought to you by Gunderson Funeral and Cremation Care, the Life Celebration Center. I'm Carol Kobe, and we'll be right back with more with Dan Buettner after these messages.
This is All About Living with Carol Kolbe, Madison 1670, WTDY.
Welcome back to our program with our guest, Dan Buettner, author of The Blue Zones, Lessons for Living Longer from the People Who've Lived the Longest and Thrive, Finding Happiness the Blue Zones Way. You may have seen or heard Dan on national news media across the country over the past 5 or 6 years, talking about what he's found from both of these books. He's also been a previous guest here on All About Living, and I'm pleased to have him back today. By the way, this program will be available also beginning next week at carolcobyradio.com. We will post the program on carolcoby, K-O-B-Y, radio.com. So if you are enjoying it and want to listen to it again or pass it along to any of your friends, be sure to go to that website. Now, when I last left you, Dan, we were talking about the discoveries of happiness in areas of the world, Denmark being number one, Singapore, Mexico, the Nuevo León area of Mexico, and San Luis Obispo in California. And just briefly, what is there in California? You found one place in the United States where people are happy. What made people particularly happy in San Luis Obispo?
It was enlightened leadership. 1970, this was a town interested in maximizing commerce and making sure traffic could flow freely, and there was lots of parking and so forth. And instead of 1970, the citizens said, you know what, instead of focusing on doing what's right for business, let's do right what's right for people. And they changed some laws. They made sidewalks wider. They rerouted the highway outside of the town so there wasn't traffic rampaging through the middle of town. They outlawed drive-throughs so you didn't have cars idling, polluting the air. You made fast food a little bit harder to get at so people ate a little bit less of it. They were the first place to outlaw smoking in bars and in restaurants, so the smoking rate dropped to the nation's lowest. We all know that smokers are less healthy and therefore less happy. There was a profusion of ugly signs downtown, and they made a law saying you can still have signs, but they need to be of a certain size and put your resources in making them beautiful. They planted trees. They created a social area in the middle of town, this Mission Plaza, they call it, which is this unbelievably pleasant place with outdoor cafes where you can meet your friends. There's an arts area, there's an area for seniors, there's an area for kids. And to have that social hub and to create an environment where people are running into their friends, running into their neighbors, and getting that 7 hours a day of social interaction we know maximizes well-being is easy to do there. And again, it's like what we teach in both Blue Zones and in Thrive.
Right.
It's about creating your own personal environment so you're more likely to be happy and live longer.
Well, it's amazing because they really pulled together all of these characteristics that you've discovered and have elicited in both books. And then the final area is in Mexico, and we don't think of Mexico as a place where people are necessarily thriving. There's a lot of poverty, low income, just disturbing lifestyles. And so what did you discover in Mexico?
Well, you know, one of the areas that we are deluded as a country is that more money buys more happiness, and it doesn't. Yes, we need food, we need shelter, we do need health care, we need some mobility, we need some money to enjoy an indulgence every now and again. But after about $75,000 a year on average, we get no more experienced happiness on a day-to-day basis than we do trying to make a bunch more. So what you see in this part of Mexico is they have enough. They do have enough food. People aren't starving. Actually, the area around Monterrey is the richest region in all of Mexico. So they're, you know, they're nearly first world there now. There's relatively high employment rates. There's relatively high health care is relatively good. The things from which we derive our true happiness is not having a bunch of money and this financial freedom gibberish, but it is having strong families, families that aren't just my kids, but also include cousins and aunts and mm-hmm. uncles. They all have religion. One of their top two values in their life is their relationship with a higher being. we know worldwide people who have a strong religion report higher levels of happiness.
And sometimes, and that can be spirituality, just a sense of a higher being, something bigger than you. That
Not really. It's part of being a faith-based community.
Okay.
That's how it's measured. You can't really measure scientifically spirituality, but you can measure religiosity.
Okay.
And the only way we can measure that really with any accuracy is mm-hmm. how often do you join services.
So that was
I think
a strong component.
You're instinctively right, Carol. It's just hard to measure.
Mm-hmm.
I try to stick to things that are data-driven.
Right. That's one thing about your research, and people can depend on that in reading your books or whatever. This is highly grounded in research. You have worked with some of the best scientists and people with expertise in aging and demographics to bring all of this information together and give it the authenticity that is really required so we can learn something from it.
Well, you see, I've got lots of offers. The reason I work with National Geographic is that fact checkers occupy the corner offices there. So
mm-hmm.
before you get that little yellow rectangle on your book, you've gone through an exhaustive fact checking process, which at the end of the day, now, you know, Blue Zones came out 3 years ago. It sells more today than it sold when it came out. And that's because there's a certain timelessness to it. It's not a fad pop diet. I'm simply reporting what people have done for hundreds or thousands of years that is yielding higher life expectancy and now greater happiness.
Well, and also I think we are beginning to, as a nation, as individuals, as communities, look to what do we need to do. We've got to do something. I just heard on the news this morning that the life expectancy of girls now is anticipated to be less than what their mothers is, just because of the overweight, the obesity, the higher level of diabetes, and
yeah.
young children are being diagnosed with diabetes. We are not well. The young people are not well, and this doesn't bode well for the longevity and healthy life that they potentially, you know, should have.
Yeah, so, and that's not kids' fault, by the way. That's our fault.
Right.
We've created an environment. 1970, and everybody who's listening right now, raise your hand if you walked to school as a kid.
I did.
I'll bet you most people's hands who are listening to your program are up right now.
Yeah.
In 1970, over half of American children walked to school. Today, it's about 11%. So we have just engineered free daily physical activity out of our kids' life because we got to bus them everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no wonder the obesity rate's tripled in the last 20 years.
And the fast food that's available, and then the lack of good food that is made accessible to areas where people don't have access to them, the lower income areas. And really, we've kind of done a 180 on what's good for us. And this takes me into the Albert Lea, Minnesota aspect of our discussion. There are so many things to cover, but you have had a marvelous project with Albert Lea, Minnesota, and this was in partnership with AARP, the New Vitality Project. And can you tell me a little bit about this, how you could get a community on board and change the dynamics of an entire community and not just individuals?
Well, we started with Blue Zone's tenet, the Power 9, but then you say, well, you can tell people all day long what they can do to live longer, but how do you actually get them to do it? And again, thanks to National Geographic, I got a grant to look at all the public health initiatives around the world, not in the U.S., that have been successful. And I found two astounding things. Number one, public health initiatives that have tried to get people to lower their chronic disease have failed in America. But there have been a few places around the world where they've succeeded. And the way they succeed is not trying to change people's behavior, not trying to get people on a new diet, not trying to get them on a new exercise program. People don't stick with those things. But rather getting people to change their environment, getting the city to change policies to make the streets and sidewalks and parks safe and easy to use and the easy option, to help people expand their social networks in the right way, to optimize designs of buildings so they're nudged into better behaviors, to work with restaurateurs, grocery store owners. And I had this grand master plan that basically used about 100 evidence-based ways to nudge people, nudge a population into better health and more social interaction, more movement, less food, and just 1-3% each of these things. And I showed the blueprint to 5 cities, and I let them compete. You convince me you want me to come in here. And Albert Lea, Minnesota did the best job. And over the course of about a year, we lowered their health care costs by 40% for city workers. We raised their life expectancy by 3 years. And we actually helped the average person lose weight. And we did it painlessly, mindlessly, and in a way that's sustainable, because 2 years later, Albert Lea is still a healthier place.
Yeah, so it was sustainable. Tell me some of the things you did, because I know that you involved restaurants. They participated. Businesses participated. Schools, homes, everyday lives, the community itself. They, you know, even planned the community. They were with bike paths and walking groups. So tell me some of the specific ideas that were implemented.
Well, do you know if your child goes to a school where he or she can, kids can eat in hallways and classrooms, kids in that school weigh about 11% more than a school where kids cannot eat in hallways and classrooms. That simple policy alone, cutting that 8 hours of junk food eating out of their day, makes a huge difference, and it doesn't really cost anything. In fact, it probably saves money. So getting that implemented. We worked with Dr. Brian Wansink, Mindless Eating. We helped people go through their kitchen, do 10 things where they would nudge them away from eating more food. There was essentially Albert Lea had 4 separate neighborhoods. And in those neighborhoods, there wasn't an easy way to get downtown. So we simply helped them figure out how to connect sidewalks and put in traffic easers, so that everybody in that town had an easy way to walk downtown. So if you make the active option the easy option, you can raise the activity level by as much as 30 or 40% of a town. No gym memberships, no yoga, none of the stuff we marketers try to sell us. And then what's coolest, in a place called Hy-Vee, Hy-Vee grocery stores created a blue zone aisle. So instead of when you're waiting to do your checkout groceries, instead of staring at candy bars and salty snacks and sugared drinks, we helped them find 20 healthy, tasty snacks that when you're waiting to pay for your groceries, those are the impulse buys. All your impulse buys are positive.
And then I noticed where there was a business, one example was a business that typically brought in donuts to have for their employees, and instead they brought in fruit and exchange donuts for fruit, and the employees just grabbed the fruit and loved it and made that as an option instead of the donuts.
Yeah, and that was enlightened leadership, because the leadership said, guess what, the new policy around here is no donuts on Thursday. The employees bought into it ultimately. They also did a few clever things, like they were drinking about 4 soda pops a day. Now, soda pops are horrible for you. Most of America's obesity is thanks to soda pop. They didn't say, we're not taking your soda pop away, but we are putting your machines at the very end of the work floor, so you got to walk 50 feet to get it, make it a little bit more inconvenient. Then they put up water, nice purified water stations, gave everybody a stainless steel water bottle, so they had a pleasant vessel to drink out of, and we were able to chart over time that pop consumption, those worthless empty calories that make us fat, they cut 50% of those out without really, again, we didn't take away their rights or their freedoms. We just made a healthier option, an easier option.
So there's a better quality of life for people. And the bottom line, according to one point in the businesses regard, is that all told, participating businesses found that absenteeism fell by 21% and health care costs for city workers in the program dropped by half. Now, if that isn't a great incentive to look at these prevention and these lifestyle changes as a means of keeping our health care costs down, I don't know what is. We have to stop for our final break, and we'll be back with Dan Buettner after these messages. This segment of our program has been brought to you by Turville Bay MRI and Radiation Oncology Center in Madison, where expertise with compassion is powerful medicine. You're listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY. This program is also available on carolcobyradio.com, carolcoby, K-O-B-Y, radio.com, and we'll be right back after these messages.
This is All About Living with Carol Colby, Madison 1670. WTDY.
We're back with our just last few minutes with Dan Buettner, the author of The Blue Zones. We've been talking about health, longevity, wellness. He has toured the world with the best scientists, marking places where people live the longest, have the healthiest lives, the best quality of life, and it's dramatically different than with some of the statistics that we find here in the United States. I read somewhere in your material, Dan, that 1 in 4,000 people in America live to be 100 or older, and in some of the Blue Zones areas, it's 1 in 600. It's really a remarkable difference.
Yeah, we found the longest-lived city in the world, a place called Villa Grande. We just announced it last week, and that's where there's about six times as many centenarians.
And they're men, and there are a lot of men there.
Yes, in most parts of the world, the proportion of male to female centenarians is 5 to 1. In other words, for every one male centenarian, there's 4 female, and here it's 1 to 1.
And so what made the men live longer in this particular area?
We think it's less stress. Women tend to carry on the burden of defense, of negotiations, of running the household. Unlike most Mediterranean cultures where men are running the show. It's a very matriarchal society there.
Okay. So it just has worked for them. Well, we just have a minute left, and what's next on your horizon? Are you going to be able to tell or spread the Albert Lea, Minnesota story to other communities around the country?
I have a couple cool things. First of all, we just developed a longevity calculator and a true happiness calculator, and they're free, and they're all science-backed. At bluezones.com. They take just a couple minutes each.
I will put that on the website, carolcobyradio.com.
And the second thing is, I work with a company called HealthWays, and we've been hired by Los Angeles to take the Albert Lea model and bring it to L.A., and it looks like we're going to be working in Iowa on a similar topic, so a similar a Blue Zone Vitality project. So this idea of helping communities change their environment so people can mindlessly live longer, I think, is going to take off in a really big way. At least that's what it looks like.
And it looks like instead of people being so personally responsible that they're alone against the rest of the community, that it becomes a community venture and we're all in it together and going along the same path. Dan Buettner, thank you so much. It's been just a pleasure to visit with you again. I hope you will come back for a fourth time as you continue with your ventures to help all of us explore longer, healthier, and happier lives. Dan Buettner has been our guest today, author of The Blue Zones, Lessons for Living Longer from the People Who've Lived the Longest and Thrive, Finding Happiness the Blue Zones Way. You can find out more information, including his Vitality Calendar, on bluezones.com. You've been listening to All About Living on Madison 1670 WTDY. I'm Carol Coby. This program also available on carolcobyradio.com. Thank you, Dylan Brogan. And now everybody go out and have a great and healthy rest of the weekend.